It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As the weather gets warmer, I'd like to take some time to think ahead to the summer. Picture it. Warm sun, a gentle breeze, and the unmistakable sight and sound of cicadas. Lots and lots of cicadas. When the summer finally comes around, there will be two broods of cicadas emerging across much of Illinois. We're used to different broods coming out every few years, but the two particular broods set to emerge this summer only cross paths like this every 221 years. In February, we talked about it on the program with Catherine Dana. She's an expert on cicadas and an affiliate of the Illinois Natural History Survey at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. For the rest of today's show, we'll be revisiting that conversation. Because this part of the program's on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can still tell us what you think about this or any other conversation we've had on the show by leaving us a voicemail at 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. Katie, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, 221 years, I mentioned. That is a very rare thing for these different broods to align with that. So maybe let's talk just basics, cicada basics. Why do they have these super long breed cycles?
You know, it's a really good question with, you know, a complicated set of potential answers. We have a few ways to think about this. So when we talk about the periodical cicadas, that's just a group of cicadas. So some cicadas only spend a year underground, and some can take as long as 19 or 20 years. When they're underground, they feed on what's called xylem, a plant fluid out of plant roots. And so this is a really, really low nutrient food source for them. And it takes them a really long time to develop on it. They do have endosymbionts that help get those like missing amino acids from those plant juices. But, you know, that could be one reason. Another reason is further towards the poles with colder temperatures, we tend to see some of our more longer lived species. And there's a theory out of Japan from Jin Yoshimura who said that it's their specific periodicity that was favored in times of low temperatures. So this may be something that we're seeing as a result of, you know, glacial periods with colder temperatures where it did take them much longer to come out and they needed to synchronize their emergence. And so it took they took 17 years in the further north region for some of our broods. And then we see the 13-year broods further south. You know, also there's the idea that maybe predators can't predict their emergence. You know, they don't know when they're going to come out, so they can't plan for it.
I love that. I love this aspect of it. I was reading a paper on this and it mentioned predator foolhardy behavior of cicadas. What does that mean?
Yeah. So one great thing about periodical cicadas, at least for me, is that, we have so many animals that eat them, right? We have snakes, we have birds, mammals, and they just get completely filled with cicadas. They can't eat anymore. They are filled to the gills. And there are still plenty left out there to mate and reproduce.
Yeah, I guess the foolhardiness is that the cicadas are not wired to run away as many prey are. All right, we need to take a break on the program. After the break, we'll continue our conversation about the emergence of not one, but two broods of cicadas in Illinois this summer. My guest is Catherine Dana, affiliate at the Illinois Natural History Survey at the U of I. More to come. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. Thank you. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation, first broadcast in February, about the emergence this year of cicadas. There are two broods coming out, one on a 17-year cycle, the other on a 13-year cycle. It's pretty rare that those cycles line up. In fact, it only happens once every 221 years. Short version, there are going to be a lot of cicadas in different parts of Illinois this summer. We talked about this with Katie Dana, an expert on cicadas and an affiliate of the Illinois Natural History Survey at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. We're not taking calls today, but you can always let us know what you think about this by sending us an email. The address is talk@21stshow.org. Okay, back now to our conversation on the summer of cicadas. Before the break, we were talking a little about some of the evolutionary basis for cicada emergence. I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that they are working on prime number cycles, just one of those neat things in nature. You know, we do hear this word brood a lot. What exactly does that mean?
So a brood is a synchronized emergence. So, you know, we know it's coming out in a particular year that emerges across a geographic area. So in general, our broods across North America don't overlap. And these brood numbers that we talk about, you know, brood 13 and 19, these were established, I think it was in the early 1900s by somebody named Marlett. And so he established, I think, 30 of them. Some of those were just some off-cycle ones. And now we have, I think, about 12 different broods that are, you know, merging across the U.S. I like to go and actually visit a lot of these broods. So you can drive across the U.S. and almost every year you can find a brood emerging. So this year we've got two different broods in two geographic areas. Now a brood can either be a 13-year brood or it can be a 17-year brood, just based on generally where it is in the U.S.
Are the broods that are emerging in Illinois, I mean, how are those distinct from the ones that may be, you know, coming out in, I don't know, say Connecticut or New Jersey in the year 2030, for example?
So brood 13, it has a pretty small range compared to some of our other broods, but we know that it has some incredibly high numbers in northern Illinois. So that one is primarily northern Illinois. It does stretch into some of the surrounding counties as well. Then in the southern half of our state, you know, with brood 19, that one is what we call the Great Southern Brood. So that one stretches all the way to the East Coast, you know, goes down south and then over to the East Coast. And each of these two broods has a different set of species. So there's three species that we see with the 17-year cicadas and four species that we see with the 13-year cicadas. So, you know, even within, you know, the broods, like it's also species that are emerging at the same time.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I mean, I'm looking at the map here and it really does this. It's light blue color. It's all over southern and central Illinois. It goes into Missouri and Arkansas, down even into Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, up into Virginia. Tennessee is in there, if I didn't already mention that. Is there like one ancestor cicada for this brood? I mean, if you go back, you know, however enough millions of years in evolutionary history, or how, you know, why are they related? Why are there such gaps in their existence?
You know, that's a great question. I'm trying to think of how to answer that. You know, we have some fossil history of cicadas, but not a lot. For some reason, they just don't seem to preserve well in our fossil record. If you go back, I think we have fossils from cicadas as far back as 100 million years ago. There's some other related species that you do see a lot more in the fossil record. But, you know, we're really limited in terms of how much we can, you know, figure out from our fossil record in terms of where these species are coming from.
Interesting. All right. One of the things that I think is most distinct about cicadas is the sound they make, right? We have a little bit of tape of that. Let's take a listen. Okay. Hopefully that wasn't as painful to our listeners as it was in my headphones, but how do they do that? What is that sound we're hearing?
So they use what we call the timbals. So they have these structures on the sides of their bodies. The males do, I should say. It's only the males. The females can't sing. And they use these they kind of buckle them. One analogy that I really liked was if you think of like a bendy straw, they use these to kind of like flex really, really, really fast in order to make that noise. So it's like kind of like it looks like a drum, but it flexes. And that's how they generally create that noise. Whereas like if you think of other insects, oftentimes they're using like their legs or their wings to rub them together to make noises. But cicadas have like specific structures that they're using. And what makes them really loud is that, in addition to these structures, which are bending and flexing, and buckling, they have like almost an entirely empty body cavity to kind of amplify that noise and make it so loud.
And you mentioned that it's the males who sing, the female can't sing. This is part of their mating, I mean, ritual, or is it, I mean, is ritual is maybe not the right term for an insect. I don't know. How would you describe it?
Yeah, it is kind of like a call and response. So, with Magus cicada in particular, and many other related species, the males will sing, and that will draw in the females, and the females will do a wing flick. So they'll make this wing flick sound motion that'll indicate to the male that she's receptive, and they'll kind of go back and forth. So the wing flick tends to happen at the end of what we call like an akeem, which is like a syllable of the song, right? And you can actually imitate this by snapping your fingers. There's a great video by Attenborough where he does this during a brood emergence, where he, snaps his fingers to call in the males, and he actually gets them to land on his hand. So it's like this, incredible call and response, but it's also very species specific. So every species has a unique song, so that the females can find their mate, right? They're not going to go to the wrong species. They're going to look, they're going to listen for that particular call.
I'm thinking of all the disappointed cicadas to find that they were being courted by David Attenborough. So, what are some of the visual tells of a cicada? Because this is also interesting, right? We're going to be seeing a lot of visual evidence of the cicada this summer.
Yes, absolutely. So you will be seeing holes in the ground. That's one of the first things that you'll start to notice when this brood emergence is they actually start to burrow, but they don't come out yet. They're trying to wait for that perfect soil temperature. And I like to think of it as like they're aerating your lawn, right? It's great. Creating holes all over your yard. And so that's one of the first lines of evidence that we'll see. And once they come out of the ground, they usually do it at night, but you'll see some during the day as well. They'll shed their shells, right? They'll molt. So they'll come out of those shells and they'll leave them all over tree branches. You see them everywhere, like on park signs. Trying to think, there's been some really interesting places. Oh, I found one molted on my car tire one time.
Say a bicycle, I seem to remember when I was a kid. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. They're everywhere, right? And so, with a lot of cicada species, we don't usually see them until they're dead, but these guys, we're going to see everywhere. And the periodical cicadas are very distinctive compared to many of the other cicada species we might be familiar with because they are black and orange and have red eyes. And so they're very colorful, which usually
You can
for
say
an
they're freaky looking.
entomologist,
They are freaky looking, yes.
and usually for an entomologist that means that they're poisonous, right? We get those aposematic colorations that we think of with, like poison dart frogs, where, it's like kind of an indicator like, oh, don't eat me. I am definitely poisonous. But these are not poisonous. And so they are edible
I was going to
if you want to
say,
snack
you know
on
what you're making me wonder? Have you tried a
them.
cicada?
I haven't eaten them, but I have got so many like recipe ideas for this year, because I can get them fresh really easily. I'm excited to try and maybe have a fun potluck.
Yeah, hopefully I don't get an invitation for that one. All right. So what about plant life? If people are gardeners, do they need to do anything to protect their plants? Is this something people should be worried about in any way?
So the cicadas aren't going to eat your plants in the way that you typically think of other insects eating your plants, right? They have what we call a proboscis. It's like a straw-like mouth part that they will drink the plant fluids from your plants. So that's not going to do much damage at all. Not you know, any more than, you know, some of our other like aphids or stink bugs, things like that. But what we do have to worry about is if you have an orchard or any young trees, because the females are going to be laying their eggs in the branches, in the stems of your trees, and that can do a bit more damage. And there has been some reported evidence that it, you know, can kill young fruit trees. But that doesn't mean that you should go out and spray insecticides, because there's going to be so many of them, there's absolutely no way that you could kill them all. And you might likely have a worse, you know, effect if you are spraying with insecticides. The best protective measure is just to get some mesh, you know, something to just cover your trees with, and maybe just put off like planting those young fruit trees. You know, these guys are only out from mid-May to late June, so you can kind of, you know, figure out how you want to time things, but just, you know, maybe put off planting those trees and maybe cover them if you're really worried about them.
Just a few minutes left in our time together, but we did have a caller who wanted to know if we'd see more cicada killer wasps this year too.
Oh, you know, that's not the first time I've gotten that question, surprisingly. And I am curious too. I think it's a little bit early in the season for them. You know, they are usually feeding on our dog day cicadas, which come out in July, but it could be that, yeah, we do see some increased activity towards the end of their, you know, season. But we'll see. I'm excited to see, for sure.
Yeah. So we end this once the cicada sort of season ends for the periodical cicadas anyway, in June, another 13 or 17 year cycle is underway. What are they doing?
So, you know, they'll be laying their eggs in the tree branches, and it takes a few weeks for them to finally hatch and fall to the ground. And then they are going to burrow down into the ground and set up a little, like, I don't know, cove underground, right? They're going to find a little root underground and develop then for 17 years. They're going to molt through those 17 years, get bigger, bigger, bigger. But it, like, the most sensitive time for cicadas is that stage where they're falling from the ground into the earth. And they're so tiny, they're smaller than a grain of rice. It's really, you know, incredible that they can start from that tiny, tiny size, so sensitive and vulnerable to the world, right? And develop into an adult, a large individual that comes above ground.
Just about a minute left. What makes cicadas so interesting to you and other scientists?
For me, I just think it's incredible that they, you know, I love all the species of Illinois. My particular favorite is a prairie cicada. So when I first came here in 2011, I missed the periodical brood emergence, which I'm really sad about. But I stepped out of the car, and it was the deafening noise of cicadas that really, really made me fall in love with them. And then going into some of these prairies where we have some really beautiful species that only exist in prairies, you know, I just became more and more in love with them, and they are imperiled. They are very imperiled, especially on the Illinois landscape where we have so few remaining prairies left. You know, we only find them in places where we have undisturbed soil. So a lot of graveyard visits, a lot of railroad prairie visits for me. They're just such incredible, incredible animals.
Catherine Dana is an expert on cicadas and an affiliate of the Illinois Natural History Survey, part of the U of I Urbana-Champaign. Katie, thank you so much for joining us again today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
That conversation was originally broadcast in February. And that's all the time we have for our show today. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Damian Contreras. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.